Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. Today, you're listening to a very special episode. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Trevor Dyson Hudson, co-director of Northern New Jersey Spinal Cord Injury Systems, a spinal cord injury model systems of care at Kessler Foundation in West Orange, New Jersey. Dr. Dyson Hudson is also a participant in the National Spinal Cord Injury Model Systems database after sustaining a spinal cord injury in 1992. As a person living with spinal cord injury, he continues to benefit greatly from the coordinated care he receives at Mount Sinai Spinal Cord Injury Model System at Kessler. I'm also joined by Sharon Parmet of Shirley Ryan Ability Lab and the host of Inside the Outcomes, a rehabilitation research podcast also available wherever you get your podcasts. Sharon and I will be co-hosting and releasing this episode together. Today, we will be talking about the National Spinal Cord Injury Model Systems Database, or SCIMS database. Since 1973, this database has been one of the most important sources of information about spinal cord injury in the United States. It captures data from about 6% of all new spinal cord injury cases nationwide, including information on more than 55,000 people who have sustained traumatic spinal cord injuries. As such, it offers an unparalleled window into long-term outcomes and recovery. Sharon and I are joined by three special guests. Dr. Yuying Chen is director of the National Spinal Cord Injury Statistical Center that manages the longitudinal National Spinal Cord Injury Database. She is a professor and vice chair of research, the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Dr. Jennifer Coker is co-director of the National Spinal Cord Injury Statistical Center at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Dr. Coker has served in various roles in spinal cord injury research at the Shepherd Center, Medical University of South Carolina's College of Health Professionals, and Craig Hospital. And finally, Ann Deitch is a research scientist at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab and a research associate professor in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation in Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. She also has an appointment as a senior research public health analyst at RTI International. She is a certified rehabilitation registered nurse with a doctoral degree in epidemiology and community health. Ann has been involved in spinal cord injury model systems research since 2006. So to get us started here, Dr. Coker, what are the spinal cord injury model systems? What is the National SCI database? And can you tell us a little bit of history about the database?
Sure thing, David. I've been a part of the SCI model systems for almost 30 years, starting as a data collector and now as co-director of the National Data Center. So thank you for having me on to talk about this. The SCI model systems were the vision of Dr. John Young, a spinal cord physician in Phoenix, Arizona, who felt that a model system of rehabilitation must be able to meet the needs of a person with a spinal cord injury by competently treating the direct injury, the functional deficits that result by providing training and equipment, the psychological adjustments that must be made, and most importantly, by providing long-term specialized care. The program began with federal funding to one center in 1970, expanded to multiple centers by 1973, and then the creation of a national data center in 1975. The SCI Model Systems Program has been continuously funded since for over 50 years now, and there are currently 18 centers across the United States funded as SCI Model Systems. Following Dr. Young's vision, the SCI Model Systems is a network of hospitals throughout the U.S. that provide multidisciplinary and comprehensive systems of care, ranging from acute emergency services through inpatient and outpatient rehabilitation. These centers also conduct research, provide education, and disseminate information with the goal of improving long-term functional, vocational, and quality of life outcomes for people with spinal cord injury. The program also funds the National Data and Statistical Center, as well as the Model Systems Knowledge Translation Center. SCI model systems are designated by a competitive grant process every 5 years. So as part of that process, model systems must propose to contribute data to the longitudinal database, conduct site-specific research at their individual institutions, participate in collaborative module projects involving other model system sites, and work with the Model Systems Knowledge Translation Center to communicate those scientific results. The hallmark of the Model Systems Program is the Longitudinal National Database, which is the largest and longest running database of people with spinal cord injury. Participants in the Longitudinal Database are enrolled during inpatient rehabilitation. We call those Form 1s, and followed, we call those Form 2s, at 1 year post-injury, 5 years post-injury, and every 5 years after from then on. Over the 50 years of funding, there have been 32 individual centers funded, enrolling more than 55,000 people with traumatic SCI and including almost 140,000 follow-up records up to 50 years post-injury. So that's a lot of data available. The variables collected at Form 1 and Form 2 are reviewed every five-year cycle for relevance, utility, importance, and interest. Variables follow the International Classification of Functioning Disability and Health, and also include variables designated as common data elements by NIH and those collected as part of the International Spinal Cord Injury data sets. Current variables include demographics and injury characteristics, functional, medical, and psychosocial outcomes, and employment outcomes. Each individual model system site enrolls, follows, and collects their own data, and twice a year it is submitted to the National Data Center, who creates a merged national data set that is available for use by researchers within the model systems as well as outside the model systems. I believe Dr. Chin is going to speak more to this later.
Thank you, Dr. Coker. This question is for Dr. Chin. What have some of the trends been that have been revealed thanks to the data, and what have you learned about changes as far as characteristics related to spinal cord injury over the years?
Sure. Sharon, thank you for the opportunity to share our finding from the database. So as Dr. Coker just mentioned, you know, the database go way back to 1970. So because the long history, 60 years, the database have been a go-to resource, you know, to tracking the spinal cord injury over time. And as you can imagine, it's very important to know, you know, what's going on in this population now and what will the future host. These are important information to know and to ask so that, you know, we can focus our prevention effort and also plan for the future healthcare needs and even set, you know, the research priority for the future. So I would like to highlight a few key findings from the database. So first one is the age and injury. So as you know, our population is aging. I'm sure everybody know about that. And also there are events happen over time as well. For example, COVID-19 pandemic definitely changed our lives. So what happened to the SCI population? So in terms of age injury, you know, back in 1970, the average age was around 29 years old, and now it's 45 years old. And so the same thing for the elderly, you know, for people age 65 and older in the 1970 is about 3% in this population we're seeing from the database to today is 20%. So this means this aging trend was noted not just in men but also women in all the racial groups, white, black, Hispanics, and for all kinds of etiology except the injury, spinal cord injury caused by violence. So for that particular group, usually happen in the younger people pretty consistently over time, mostly around 27 to 29 years old. Speaking of aging again, compared to the general population, looks like our spinal cord injury population aging faster than the general population. There's a couple examples here. So in terms of the average age in the US population, it's about 12 years increase over the last 60 years. But in the SCI population, we're seeing 16 years increase from the 1970 to 2024. Same thing for the percentage of elderly, right? We, in the SCI population, we see about 70% increase in terms of the percentage point. But in the general population, we only see 7%. So what does this mean? This tell us that we do a very good job in preventing spinal cord injury in the younger group. But in the old elderly, because we are getting old, people getting old will have, chronic condition, they are born maybe more fragile. So just a simple fall at home, can cause very severe injury, including the spinal cord injury. So these are the information very important for us to focus on the prevention efforts, and also, for the health system to be prepared to take care of elderly with spinal cord injury. Another trend I like to share is the cause of injury. So the car crashes still the leading cause, the most common cause, make up about 36% of all the SCI cases we've seen in the model system currently. But fall has been increasing, from about 17% of cases in the 1970 to 33% today. So again, this is related to the people aging, and the fall is the most common cause of injury in this elderly. Another interesting finding is that injury related to violence have increased recently, from about pre-pandemic or kind of in the 2000, it's about 14% of cases we think is caused by violence, but in recent year, it's 17%. So this change, this increase, is kind of connected to the surge of the gun violence during the COVID pandemic. And also this is kind of match with the gun violence is that the age group, right? Usually happen in a young, very young male and Hispanic Black. When it comes to women, we see a little bit increase in violent etiology as well. Domestic violence, as we know, kind of increased during the pandemic as well. So these are the areas we can pay attention for prevention effort. Another important point I want to make is that usually injury caused by violence has a worse outcome, especially the penetrating trauma, gunshot wound, usually is a complete injury. So their neural recovery usually is not as ideal as other type of injuries. So another important thing I like to highlight is that the shift we're seeing toward more high cervical injury and more motor incomplete injury and fewer complete injuries. So these are definitely a good news. That means that our care is getting better from the pre-injury spine stabilization to acute care to rehab care. But also it could related to that because just we the aging of the population, most of the fall related injury in the elderly is more incomplete injuries. So there are other interesting finding which generally parallel our general population shift, such as we see more single never married in the SCI population as well. We see the education level getting better. So these are the factor we would like to monitor over time to see if that have any impact or benefits on the long-term future outcome. So I like just kind of pause here, kind of emphasize again, very important to understand the trend over time to help us, predict the future for healthcare needs and also set up for the research agenda.
So, Dr. Chen, you point out these awesome examples of data that we can only derive from a longitudinal database, but and you're a user of this database, and I think you have some great examples for us of other things that we've learned from the use of the database.
Yeah, and thanks for the opportunity to be part of this podcast. So, one of the other things that we've learned from the database is that length of stay in both the acute care phase after an injury, as well as the rehabilitation stay, has decreased over time. And so, the database has shown us that in the early 1970s, the average acute care length of stay was about 30 days, and it's decreased to about 19 days since about 2015. And for the past 10 years, it's been fairly stable at that length. And then in terms of the rehabilitation length of stay, it was originally 110 days on average back in the 1970s, and it's been about 37 days on average since about 2015. And again, been generally stable for about the past 10 years. And some of this trend, follows the rest of the healthcare system in terms of the movement to more outpatient services. So when patients, after their initial injury, have been through acute care and then have had a rehabilitation stay, they often are receiving outpatient therapy services. And some rehabilitation programs, for example, including the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, have a very well-established day rehabilitation program. So patients or people who have had a spinal cord injury can live in their homes, live in their communities, and come in to get therapy and nursing and physician services during the day and get that intensive therapy, but have the benefit of being able to sleep in their own bed at night and be able to not have the distractions of a hospital environment. One of the other studies that I've been involved in looked at the relationship between length of stay and functional outcomes. So, as was touched on previously by Jen and Yu Ying, one of the main outcomes that we look at in the database is patients' functional outcomes. And we did find in general that people who had longer length of stays in rehabilitation after the spinal cord injury did have better functional improvement by the time of discharge. Another area of interest has been related to readmissions. So if somebody is discharged home, obviously they want to stay at home. They don't want to have an unexpected hospital stay. But we have found that since about 2015, people who are in the database, about 29% are admitted to a hospital during any given year. And the reason for those admissions are things related to urinary tract systems, as well as skin problems. So, for example, pressure ulcers. We've also learned that on average, when people are admitted to the hospital, that the average length of stay is about 18 days. I think the last thing that I'll mention is that, as Yu Ying mentioned, there has been this trend of people being older at the time of injury. And we are also following people who are obviously may have been injured many years ago and are aging with the spinal cord injury. And so the area of aging and being an older adult at the time of the injury has definitely been an area of research for several research people. And in terms of related to the aging and living with the spinal cord injury, there have been a fair number of studies that looked at causes of death during the And during the first year, the primary causes of death have been respiratory conditions, for example, pneumonia or influenza. And heart disease is the next most common area of cause of death. And infections, parasitic or otherwise, is a third leading cause of death after the first year. And this, as Yu Ying indicated, this kind of information is truly helpful for clinicians to know
in terms of helping to prevent these events from happening. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Dr. Chen, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about who uses the data, what kinds of folks access the data, and how do they use it?
Sure. So as Dr. Deitch just mentioned, you can see that the database has been used a lot, you know, for research, right? Trends, cause of death, life expectancy, length of stay, and all kinds of rehabilitation outcome. We also do some more lay language publication for the public. For example, we put out fact sheets, facts and figure, data sheets, and annual report, and we post all of that on the websites. Also, the database not just, you know, utilized within the very close net scheme network. We also make our data available. Everybody can go and download the data. So it's on the website, and along with the data set, we have many documents there as well to help user to understand the database, you know, what's included in the database, how the database being used for publications, a lot of data dictionary, data collection from there to help people using the data appropriately. So for the public data set, on average, we see about 2 to 3 downloads every week. Most of requests coming from academic institution, but about 14% coming from nonprofits and another 14% coming from commercial company. So people use the data not just for research. You know, we see people use that for market assessment for new products, new devices. We saw students use the data for capstone project, dissertation, and even we have educator, you know, indicate that they use the database for teaching or homework assignment. So about 15% of the requests coming outside of the United States, and that's very exciting. You know, we have places like Australia, Brazil, China, Switzerland, you know, Thailand. So it's not just in the United States.
Not to interrupt Dr. Chen, which I just did, but I recently presented about the SCI model systems at a conference in India, and there is great interest. They have a large number of rehabilitation centers across a huge country, and they are very interested in modeling what we have done, which, you know, brings together all the work that individual rehab centers are doing so that they can make that comprehensive center of care as envisioned in the model systems.
Yeah, Dr. Coker brought up a good point. Yeah, that's one of the things we like to do too. When we go to conference, always like to tell people about our database. And we do have information on the website to help them develop their own as well. So the last thing I like to mention is that we also invest in the future. You know, we have summer internship opportunity. We also have the Mentor Research Award to help train the next generation of SCI researchers.
So, dear listener, no matter who you are, Dr. Chen has given an example of how you might be using this database. And as a college professor, I just have to, you know, say, hey, students, take a look for your potential theses and capstones and stuff. So thank you for those great examples. And moving on to Dr. Trevor Dyson Hudson, who is also a host of this podcast, but in this role, this is a great example of someone who has both the intellectual understanding of how these model systems works and who has the lived experience of having been a recipient of the benefits of this. So Dr. Dyson Hudson, can you tell us a little bit about your personal connection to the database?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, David. Thanks for inviting me to participate in this with Jen, Yuying, and Anne. It's interesting. I might be one of only a few directors of a spinal cord injury model system center who is actually a patient in the model systems database. To me, though, it's more than just a database. When you, as a patient, enroll in this database, you actually become part of the model system community and the resources that it provides, some of the things Jen talks about. You know, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, I sustained my spinal cord injury back in 1992. So I guess I've been part of the model systems for about 33 years. 25 years of those, I've been a researcher at Kessler. And for me, what is most thrilling is 15 years of those, I've actually been a director. So to go from lying in an intensive care unit with a spinal cord injury, wondering what's going to happen to me, to actually be director of a spinal cord injury system just continues to boggle my mind. And it's interesting to compare my inpatient rehabilitation experience to what people are experiencing now and seeing firsthand some of the trends Ying and Anne have discussed earlier. So just kind of to go back, because again, to me, it's more than just the database. But I was in medical school at the time of my injury. So I was part of the medical community. I kind of say I was part of the tribe. But nothing in life prepares you for a spinal cord injury. So I had even followed a newly injured person with spinal cord injury for a few months earlier as part of my PM&R clinical rotation in medical school. However, the reality of the spinal cord injury and how much it changed one's life didn't hit me until I actually had my own injury. So it's likely one of the most devastating things that can happen to someone short of dying, right? So as I said, even though I was part of the medical community, I felt completely lost and overwhelmed after my injury. However, I was fortunate to do my inpatient at a model system center. And at that time, you know, my doctor introduced me to this model co systems concept that Jen was talking about and the continuum of care that it provided all the way through to community reintegration. And it was like a light went off in my head. You know, I realized my family and I weren't alone. And we were part of a community whose focus was caring for people with spinal cord injury and helping them get back on with their lives. You know, and I really can't fully describe how comforting that was at that time. So for me, it meant so much to be part of this community. So, and what you have to realize is by being a participant in the database, I'm still part of that community and the resources that it can provide. You know, as I said, I've been injured 33 years. The model systems, Ying might have said, they set benchmarks for follow-up rates at 80%. So they are really committed to people who are enrolled in their database. So I get that call every 5 years, you know, so I can commiserate with the data collectors. I can even commiserate that I try to duck the phone calls because everybody's so busy. But, it's that resource is still there. So, but you know, one doesn't have to be a participant in the database to benefit from the model systems. You know, for example, there are resources available from the Model Systems Knowledge Translation Center, or what we call the MSKTC, which is also funded by NIDLR. And the MSKTC is the national center that translates all the health and research information from the various model systems that include spinal cord injury, brain injury, and burn. And what they do is create user-friendly resources like fact sheets, videos, toolkits, based on evidence from the model systems programs. And these resources are designed for patients, their families, and clinicians to improve long-term outcomes and quality of life. And many of these resources are also available in Spanish. So these are available to people even if they're not part of the model systems.
Yeah, Trevor, I really appreciate that you answered my question before I could ask it, which is for Form 2 as a model systems TCUT, do they call you or do they roll up to your office? So you do get the
Well, it's
phone
Mount
call.
Sinai, so they're kind of not. It's not. I'm not part of Kessler, so it's
There you
Mount
go.
Sinai. So, and as competitive as we are, we're always competing against each other because we're looking at follow-up rates and who's got the highest follow-up rates and stuff. But yeah, no, I'm always. And as at the top of the hours, I get my care from both Mount Sinai and Kessler, so I benefit from both worlds.
Trevor, you benefit in both worlds, at least in one, because of the cause of your injury. There are certain people with spinal cord conditions that so far the model systems have not been pointed at. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure, yeah. So as you said, so the database really is a reflection of the model systems, which, as you said, focused on traumatic spinal cord injury. For the consumers who may be listening to this, one of the things that we, you know, all spinal cord injuries are traumatic to the individual. So I think, you know, we have to realize that. So when we say traumatic injuries, as was said earlier, these are injuries that are caused by some sort of external event, like a motor vehicle crash, fall, sports related, or act of violence. So the database doesn't include injuries from non-traumatic causes, which are people who maybe had their spinal cord injury from a spinal stroke or a bleed, a tumor, or some infection. And so the injury characteristics of these individuals may be very different. So, for example, one of the things we've seen is the onset of paralysis may be less clear, right? If you have a traumatic injury, there's this event and you are paralyzed from that event, whereas somebody who maybe may have a very slower onset. And so their introduction into rehabilitation may be very different. They may see a lot of different doctors. Their paralysis may be a very slow process. And even what is a non-traumatic injury really is up to debate. So as I said, in the most recent cycle, the model systems launched a joint collaborative project to collect information on newly injured people with non-traumatic spinal cord injury, and then have been collecting one-year follow-up data. So we're in the process of analyzing that data right now.
Yes, and as Trevor noted, that the onset of paralysis for a so-called non-traumatic spinal cord injury may be very different. So the course of rehab for someone with a non-traumatic spinal cord injury is going to be very different than the course of rehab for someone with a traumatic spinal cord injury. And so for our pilot study, we had a lot of challenges in identifying the diagnosis, because a lot of times people are misdiagnosed a number of times, and then identifying these dates of injury. As Trevor said, you know, the date of a traumatic spinal cord injury is very definable, but the date of a non-traumatic spinal cord injury is not as definable. So following that trajectory of rehab and outpatient rehab has been an interesting learning experience for us.
I would add a couple. I mean, people with non-traumatic injuries can definitely benefit from the research we're doing, the resources. And we have many people with non-traumatic injuries participating in our site-specific projects. I think one of the challenging things, you know, there's no doubt when I go to document that I have a disability, it's very clear that I have a disability because I had an event that caused my spinal cord injury. We've had some focus groups with people with non-traumatic injuries where their disability is in doubt. Every time they go to see a doctor, they have to prove to them that they have a disability, that they should qualify to get a wheelchair or get some sort of special accommodation because they have a disability. So they can have a particularly challenging for people with non-traumatic spinal cord injury. So
I'll add that, you know, for this pilot project, we learned a lot, as you have heard from Trevor, from Jen, you know, we learned a lot. So one of the purpose of doing this is that see the feasibility and what will be the data collection protocol, you know, is possible. We are, you know, including people with non-traumatic SCI to the database. That's one of the a purpose of doing this pilot.
And I think one of the things we realize is that, you know, we want to continue the traumatic data collection. And if we're going to add non-traumatic, we're going to need a lot more resources Because it just following people seems relatively straightforward, but there's a lot of work put in by research assistants, coordinators, data managers to track people down after all these years and then connect with them on the phone and to do the survey. And so to add non-traumatic to that is just going to add a lot more, require a lot more resources. So.
Well, I wanted to kind of open this question up to everybody. Can we talk a little bit about the future directions for the database? What does the future look like, and why is it so important that the model system centers continue to receive funding?
I can take this first. Yu-Ying talked about the aging population, and that follows the general population. We as a population are getting older, and so the current Department of HHS, Health and Human Services, has set their priorities on aging and prevention of chronic disease and illness. And these chronic disease and illness, heart disease, diabetes, other cardiovascular type diseases are not limited to people in the general population. That includes people with spinal cord injury. So as our participants with spinal cord injury are aging, this priority also is for prevention of chronic disease and illness in a spinal cord injury population.
Yeah, and this is Anne. I'll build on what Jen said. So I did want to highlight that the database, the items that are collected for the database have evolved over time to reflect this changing population. And so there's been items added for comorbidities or, other diagnoses other than spinal cord injury. For example, diabetes, as you just heard about. And that's important so that as Dr. Chen mentioned earlier, the health systems and health professionals are aware of what expertise and needs there are for these patients who have experienced a spinal cord injury. I think the other thing that I'll highlight is that it's helpful information for policymakers to understand these trends. Because the Medicare program, for example, is responsible for paying for services for people who are elderly or people who have permanent disabilities. And so understanding the needs of those patients is important in order to make sure that reimbursement rates are set appropriately for hospitals caring for those individuals. Also, monitoring the quality of care is another policy topic that's important. And the database does have information about functional outcomes, as well as outcomes such as quality of life, which are important outcomes. I guess the last thing I'll note is that understanding these trends is also helpful for the health professions so that people are trained appropriately to care for patients. And that includes nurses, physicians, as well as social workers. With the older adult who has a spinal cord injury, they may have a spouse or they may be widowed, and so they may need additional community supports in order to remain living in the community. And so making sure, for example, that we have case managers, social workers who can assist with those needs in order to help people stay in the community is really important.
So I'll add a little bit my thought regarding the database utilization, looking ahead to the future. So one exciting development is the collaboration with other, spinal cord injury registry. For example, the Veterans Health Administration has a spinal cord injury and disease registry. This registry has been around since 1994. It's much younger than the spinal cord injury model system database. So we've been working together to harmonizing the data, and also we are going to do some joint research with the Veteran Health Administration SCI Registry. My personal vision on this is that, linking these two biggest SCI registry in the United States, it's opening the door, for a very powerful cross-system learning, right? So, and learning community. So I can see this collaboration will have huge potential to, guide our best practice, either in the prevention, acute care, or rehabilitation. So this is really very exciting step forward for the field and for the future.
And I would just say continued funding for the program. I mean, this is an opportunity you have right now. It's 18 leading centers across the country who are part of a program. We literally meet at a table twice a year to discuss our research, advocacy, education, dissemination. So this way, we just continue to provide this model system of care instead of falling back into a fragmented care to people with spinal cord injury. And especially given just how things are changing across the health landscape, I mean, I just think there's even more of a need for the model systems to provide the care to people with spinal cord. This is a very expensive injury, right? So.
Right, listener, there you have it. Alignment with current administration at HHS to reduce costs, to collaborate with other registries, to make sure that we remain defragmented here in our world of spinal cord injury. So this has been a very informative episode. I think our listeners will really enjoy. I want to thank all of our guests for being on the podcast today, and my co-host for this episode, Sharon Parmet from Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, who will be releasing this episode on her podcast, Inside the Outcomes, available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please contact us at SCIPerspectivesPodcast@gmail.com.